Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians. All while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
A very good morning to you.
Well, good morning to you, too.
Yes.
But it's just us today.
That's right.
She is up in Canada, has a niece getting married.
Oh, nice.
So she's gone to a nice Hindu wedding for this weekend.
So, okay. And those last sometimes several days.
Sometimes, 2-3 days at a time. Yeah,
So we'll have to find out all about it and get the pictures next week. Not next week. That's Memorial Day weekend.
That's Memorial Day weekend. We'll all be out memorializing.
We will be memorializing, and we do have a special show planned for you, as always, with some of our favorite phone calls. So we'll include those as well next week. So we'll all be together 2 weeks from today. So today is the day to call in if you have questions.
Yep.
Dr. Mixon is here and ready to go. And let me go ahead and throw that phone number out for you. 800-465-8770. Dr. Mixon, were you flying around anywhere this week?
No.
I
stayed in town.
Good.
I've been chatting with people all over the country, but I haven't actually gone anywhere this week.
Okay, that's rare.
Yeah, it is. I seem to spend way too much time in airports.
There we go. I was sharing your schedule with my old boss, who gave me a call. Uh-huh. And I said, yes, I said, you'd never, he's 76 almost.
Almost 77, actually, this summer.
Okay, this summer. And I said, his schedule is amazing. He gets up, and I, kind of went through the whole thing. And I said, and that's why, that's why he can keep up with all the things.
That's why we accomplish stuff, though.
There you go.
So, yeah, it's been an interesting week, though. You know, we've had the gallery test for some time, in which we're able to screen for 50 different cancers. There's a group in England that I'm following that is actually taking that a step further.
Oh.
They've now identified several hundred proteins that when looked at in aggregate with AI, they're able to predict, they believe, who's going to get a variety of cancers 5 to 7 years in the future.
Wow.
All right.
Wow.
Which is, which would be a fascinating step. I'm not sure how many people will accept that. If we do a blood test and we say, yes, it looks to me, ma'am, like you're going to get colon cancer or breast cancer or whatever in 5 to 7 years from now. I mean, if from a medical standpoint, that's wonderful news because
Time to change things.
We have time to change the triggers and mm-hmm. to put them on things that would decrease the risk of it developing and growing. On the other hand, I suspect that if I tell somebody they're going to get a cancer 5 years hence, anxiety levels are going to go through the roof.
Yes. Oh, boy. What if they're wrong? What if it's 4 years? Oh, boy. Yeah, I didn't think of that. But you're right.
So, I mean, from a doctor's standpoint, it's wonderful sorts of developments mm-hmm. that are coming. Now, clearly, it has not yet been approved for use anywhere, not in Britain as yet where it's being developed, nor in the United States. But it's the kind of thing that I like to follow. I look at the research to see, who's doing what fascinating stuff that we can use as soon as it becomes available.
Yes. Wow. Okay, and so that's just like our gallery test, but on steroids.
Yeah, yeah. Instead of saying, okay, it looks like you may
have... You are at risk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Instead of saying, it looks like you may have
this.
A small cancer here or there, you know, so let's go look for it. Instead, they're saying... I think you might get a cancer 5 to 7 years in the future. So that would be pretty fascinating.
Wow. And if only they could do that with other things, too. And kind of we do at longevity. You're able to predict, see who's at risk for different things.
You can see who is heading towards diabetes and dementia and heart disease, et cetera, long before you get there. But that's mostly based on, you know, biomarkers and lifestyle issues. But this is taking that technology one step further.
Yes.
So it'll be interesting to see how it pans out.
Okay. Well, that's exciting news. What else have you read recently, Doctor, and seen that you can share?
Well, you know, there's the group down in California that did studies a few years ago on thymus regeneration.
Okay.
And I've been following that one pretty closely. I was talking to their CEO earlier this week because they have their latest study will be published in about September, he thinks. Obviously, I like to know stuff before other people. So I'm kind of working him a bit to see if I can get a peek at the data prior to September. I'd like to see it next month or so if I could. But, you know, I'll work on them. We'll see.
Okay.
They don't generally like to let it out in public before it's officially published.
So people don't go looking for it right now.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay.
And then, of course, one of the things that was really of interest to one of our callers last week, in the second show, we had a caller in the last hour, actually. I identify myself as Joe, who had congestive heart failure with pulmonary edema.
Yes, he had all sorts of things going on there.
Yeah, well, you know, that's a horrible. If you're admitted to the hospital with pulmonary edema due to congestive failure, you know, you got a 50% chance of being dead within the next year.
Yeah, and he was a large guy, too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and most of them are. Mm-hmm. Overweight, diabetic.
Okay.
But interestingly, the semaglutide, the drug that is being used for weight loss, also not only helps these folks lose weight, but also seems to improve cardiac function significantly.
So another reason to look at that seriously.
Yeah, so, you know, he's... based just on the information he gave us in his call, it sounded like nobody was paying much attention and, you know, he was in real trouble.
Yeah.
And he had once been one of our patients, and so we invited him to come back and let us jump on this hard, because you hate to have somebody die when they don't need to. But, you know, we're using the semaglutide now for a large number of our patients, in fact, for our staff.
Yes.
In fact, it is a employment benefit for, you know, for my staff members. So I am providing a lot of them with this, and they're getting significant weight loss.
I opened the fridge.
Lost 47 pounds.
Yeah, and I opened the fridge, and it's like all the, you know, there used to be some creamers in there that were not so good for you. It's all fresh fruit and, you know, the snacks and things that people are.
Yes,
yeah,
yes.
It's like, I can tell.
The ladies that do the buying are now watching their figure a little more closely.
And getting the good things
that are
healthy for us. So,
you know, we've got several things. We've got the cancer prediction studies. We've got the semaglutide, not just for weight loss, but also for cardiovascular disease. We're kind of steaming along on the research trails.
Good.
No dramatic breakthroughs this week, however.
Okay. But you never know.
Nope, never know. And, you know, I'm a little surprised. I didn't see anything incredibly stupid being done by a politician this week, which shocks me because...
They might be on vacation.
Maybe. They're taking the week off before Memorial Day.
Well, yeah.
after all. Why would they work?
Valentine's Day.
That's right. Yes. Anyway.
Oh, boy. Well, you ready to answer some questions?
Let's take a few calls and see where it goes today.
Okay. Well, we were just talking about cancer, and we have Joe from Chehalis on the line and would like to talk about that as well. So let's just jump right in. Good morning, Joe. Welcome to
Good morning, Joe.
Leading Edge Medicine.
Good morning, Doctor. I talked to you a couple of weeks ago about my sister's breast cancer, mm-hmm. and she went ahead and went through the operation, and everything went fine.
Good.
And what I'm kind of concerned about is the oncologist on what he wants to do, and which is wipe out her hormones. So I'm kind of hoping to get involved in your program there, but is this the only way, you know, oncologists in Washington State handle the aftermath of a cancer operation, is to wipe out their hormones?
No, but it's common. It's not the only way, but it is a common way. And, you know, the reasoning in some ways makes good sense. In other ways, I think it's a bit archaic. But it depends on the cancer, too. The cancer itself, you know, you need to take that cancer, you go in, you have them run a genome analysis on the cancer, and that'll give you a lot of information about, you know, what therapies can and cannot be useful in this particular tumor. And so, you know, as a guy on the radio who has no access to her pathology report and no access to the genomic analysis,
right.
You know, I can talk about what usually happens. I can't tell you about that particular patient, clearly. Mm. And besides which, I'm not an oncologist. You know, I am a specialist in the aging process.
Yes, and preventing things.
As much as we can.
As much, right. Yeah.
But go ahead. What were you going to say?
Well, it was a invasive ductal carcinoma.
Okay.
That's all I could really read out of this pathology report. But I mean, if I was to get her into your guys' office and you guys were able to do a blood draw on her, and would your doctor be able to look at this and understand it better?
He'd probably understand it, but the question is, are we going to, you know, are we going to tell her, don't pay attention to your oncologist? And our answer to that is no, we're not.
Are there better oncologists out there?
Well, there are oncologists who have a variety of opinions of how things should be done, yes. You know, not all doctors agree with every other doctor. There are some physicians that are, you know, that are far more sparing with the hormone blockers than others. And some small number that I really like are people that are using high testosterone doses to kill cancers, to kill breast cancer, because that avoids some of the problems. But let me explain why her oncologist wants to get rid of her hormones. And once you understand their reasoning, you know, you can make a very good case for it, which is why I'm not going to say that it is bad or wrong. I'm just going to say I think there are other alternatives. Estrogen doesn't cause breast cancer. In fact, the data is looking more like it's the lack of estrogens and the lack of testosterone that results in the breast cancer. Breast cancer in young women with high estrogen and high testosterone loads is extremely rare. About the only people that get it are people with BRAC2 genetic defects. But for the vast majority of women, as the hormone status is declining, breast cancer starts rising, and the lower the hormone levels, the higher their risk of breast cancer. But what appears to be happening is that when the hormone levels get too low, the breast is starving for its hormones. And so some cell hidden down in that breast undergoes a mutation that allows it to make its own hormones and its own growth factors. So it stops being dependent on the circulating hormones in your body, and it starts producing its own from your precursor hormones. And among the things that changes is it kicks out its own growth factors, and it essentially becomes an immortalized cell. Mm-hmm. And will just grow and grow and grow and grow. And the bigger it grows, the more of its own growth factors it's producing. We'd like to turn off that process in the tumor, but we don't have a drug that'll do that. So what they end up doing is they turn off the ability to make the hormones in your entire body. We give you drugs like Lupron that just shut it all down. Well, that shuts down the growth factors in the tumor, which is good news. Unfortunately, it also shuts them down in the rest of your body, and that's bad news. And we are up against a break time, so let me carry this over to the other side of the break, and I'll continue, okay? So sit tight. We'll be right back.
All right, Joe, we'll be back to talk with you about the breast cancer and why Dr. Mixon's got some ideas and the oncologist has some ideas, and we'll talk about that in just a moment. Terry, we're going to get to you as well as Linda and Matthew. We've got a busy show. It's starting strong. 800-465-8770 is that number to get through to Dr. Mixon today for Leading Edge Medicine. We'll be right back. Forever young?
What?
Yes. Would you like to be forever young, Dr. Mixon? Although you're pretty close.
Forever is a long time.
That's a very long time.
I don't know. You know, I have been able to live most men's wilder fantasies already.
So forever young. Oh, Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Mixon here.
Besides which, I have always said young and stupid are pretty much a redundancy. And I don't know if I really want to get stupid again.
Yeah. Okay. So we're talking with Joe from Trey Healers.
That's right. Okay, Joe. So anyway, since we don't know how to turn it off in just the tumor. We turn it off everywhere. The downside of that is the rest of your body needs those hormones. And so brain fog and memory and dementia starts going up. Your skin ages 10 years in one. Your bones start to thin out and you start developing osteoporosis, and the risk of cardiovascular disease starts rising rapidly because these hormones are protective against heart disease. And so there's a trade-off. You know, on the one hand, you are slowing the growth of the tumor. On the other hand, you are, you know, kicking the rest of your body's metabolism right in the head. And so the question is, is there an alternative?
Doctor, I got a question if I can.
Sure.
If the balancing of the hormones, you know, the lack of the hormones is maybe what's causing the cancer. The tumor is gone mm-hmm. because they eradicated it. So mm-hmm. now it's just about looking into the future. So if her having her hormones balanced out to a 25-year-old, you know, which probably rarely has cancer, right?
That's right.
Isn't that a better way to go?
Well, generally, I would approve of that. Here's the difference. The people that are approaching this, they're giving them both a hormone blocker, and they giving these ladies a high-dose testosterone. Now, testosterone can be turned into estrogen by the tumor, which is why you include a blocker with it. So they're not able to convert the testosterone to estrogen. But testosterone is potent anti-breast cancer. It kills breast cancer. It makes breast cancer shrivel up and go away. And so giving these ladies high-dose testosterone also improves the brain fog. It gives them self-confidence, drive, ambition. It helps them to make new bone so they don't lose bone. It helps their sexuality to come back or be maintained. And it shrinks down the tumor. So instead of simply blocking all of her hormone production, using implants perhaps that have both a combination of an aromatase inhibitor to prevent the conversion of testosterone to estrogen along with significant testosterone load. And we're talking about raising the levels even a bit above where normal, healthy young women are, because your goal is to really suppress that tumor. Helps a lot. I'd also take, I'd put a question mark in your statement that the tumor has been eradicated. Remember, every cancer starts with one cell. One cell. The average woman has had a breast cancer for 5 years before it's big enough for us to discover it. One cell we can't find, nor can we find two or four or six or eight or ten or a million. And so quite often what happens, usually if you're going to get a reoccurrence, the vast majority of the reoccurrences occur in the first 5 years. And that's because what's really happened is they didn't develop a new cancer. They already had spread that was just a few cells that were too small for anybody to know about. And then over the course of the next several years, those cells grow big enough that we now find a cancer. But it's not usually formed from fresh. The thinking is it's probably a metastasis that we had missed because it was just too small for anybody to find when we were treating the original tumor.
Is there any oncologist in Washington State that understand your protocol better that she may be able to go to?
Yes, there are some. And I wish I could name them off the top of my head. You know, we had a caller a few months ago who had a breast cancer, went to an oncologist down in the Tacoma area who had heard me speak at times and was familiar with what I was saying and actually encouraged her to continue her hormones and, if I recall correctly, put her on a significant amount of testosterone. You know, the biggest proponent of this is a doctor in Ohio, Dr. Rebecca Glazier. And
I did look her up.
Yeah, I've sent her papers out to a fair number of people when they ask for them.
No, I think it's brilliant what they're doing. And, well, all right. Thank you, doctor. I think I'm going to try to get her in for at least so you guys can do a blood work on her and maybe look at what she's got going on here before she destroys her hormones. Because I think that's going to work well for her depression and anxiety that she has already.
Yes, and these are things that we don't like to get out of hand because depressive disorders, anxiety disorders can, you know, spoil all the joy in life. And so we like to try to avoid those when we can.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, doctor.
All right.
You're welcome, sir. Take care.
Bye. Thank you for the call, Joe. Keep us updated on that. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine. Dr. Jerry Mixon in the studio taking your calls. We're headed to Mount Lake Terrace now. Terry is on the line. Hi, Terry.
Hello, Terry.
Hi. Hi there. Say, I'm calling today on behalf of a friend of mine who wasn't able to attend for other reasons, but he and I were talking earlier in the week, and he admitted to having a fairly significant BPH issue with PSA at like 13.8. And the doctor was suggesting some invasive procedures he wasn't too thrilled about. He didn't know anything at all about you, and so I described to him that you had suggested some perhaps successful non-invasive treatments that could be helpful. So I volunteered to call on his behalf and ask you to just do a general education on that so that he can pick that up in the recording next week.
Okay, sounds fine. Hopefully, if this sort of thing occurs a month or so hence, you'll be able to do it as a online video presentation, too. Mm. You'll actually see us as well as hear us.
That's right. Okay. So first of all, BPH, what does that stand for,
doctor? BPH stands for benign prostatic hypertrophy.
Okay.
The prostate is getting big enough that it is compressing the ureter. The prostate has three lobes, and they basically surround the ureter, the opening that runs from the bladder down the penis. And so when the prostate gets too big, it starts compressing that ureter, and then you can't pee.
Mm, okay.
And you start retaining more and more urine in your bladder, and you never really empty it. So you end up having to pee about every hour because you're just urinating off the top 50 or 100 cc's, and the rest of it is just sitting in there. And the classic reason to go in is to shell out or destroy part of the prostate gland that surrounds that ureter and give it room for the urine to get through easily.
Okay. So it's not necessarily an itty-bitty bladder issue for men.
No.
Get in and get it checked.
Yeah, it's actually an enlarged prostate problem, okay. And this fellow may have those sort of symptoms. Several ways to approach it. First thing that I always do is I put guys on a PDE5 inhibitor like tadalafil. Tadalafil was designed initially as a erectile disorder drug. And men with BPH usually also have erectile disorders. One of the problems is that the nerves to the penis are actually run around the outside of the bladder and then down. And as that prostate enlarges and the urinary bladder is getting distended, those nerves get stretched and stretched and stretched, and then they become less and less functional. So if you can fix the BPH and empty the bladder, often their erectile disorder will clear or at least improve. But the PDE5 inhibitors are smooth muscle relaxers. And so they relax the smooth muscle in and around the ureter and allow the urine to pass more freely. So that's a cheap, simple, easy thing. You know, the generic versions of these are, I don't know, 30, 40 cents a day. Mm. It's not a major investment. The other fascinating thing is that studies are showing that PDE5 inhibitors cut the risk of prostate cancer by about 50%.
Mm. Okay.
So, you know, they also increase the blood flow to your brain, your muscles, your heart, your lungs, your kidneys, everywhere. So
lots of benefits.
Yeah. So we get better exercise tolerance, clearer minds, more enthusiasm, our hearts work better. We lower the risk of prostate cancer and we pee better. That's a win all the way around. And as a side effect, you might have a better love life.
So, all good things.
All good things. Mm-hmm. So that's one place. Now there are also alpha agonists that can be given that will also help smooth muscles relax. I'm not as crazy about those because they have more cognitive and blood pressure issues associated with them. But, you know, urologists use a fair number of them. And then beyond that, you start getting into things like the sound wave therapies, the shockwave therapy, where we basically put a transducer on the perineum back behind the testicles, right over the prostate, and send pulses of sound waves in there that tend to increase blood supply and decrease inflammation within the prostate, which usually results in some shrinkage and some improvement in urination.
And we've been doing that here at Longevity.
We do that here at Longevity and are being quite successful with improving symptoms.
Whether you're a patient or not, we can do that for you. Mm-hmm.
It doesn't really make the prostate smaller, but it certainly lets your urine stream improve significantly. So that's a help. I hear the music, so we got to take a little break, but sit tight and we'll come back and touch the rest of what we can do for prostates here in a minute.
All right. Stay there, Terry. And Linda and Matthew will get to your phone calls next as well. This is Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon. I'm Lynette. We'll be right back.
I can see clearly now the rain is gone.
And we're back. It's Leading Edge Medicine. Hope you're having a wonderful morning with the rain, maybe a hot cup of coffee. I got my coffee here. Dr. Mixon, you have your tea over there?
Yes.
Okay. And we have Terry on the line. We're talking about enlarged prostates.
Right. Well, so in addition to medications and the sound wave therapies, you know, after that, you start moving into invasive procedures. But even those have a wide variety of things that can be done. And among the ways that are used to shell out parts of the prostate You've got things such as the hydrotherapies where they're actually using water streams to do it. They've got another method where they actually inject, just put a little needle through the wall into the prostate and inject little bits, bursts of steam to kill pieces of the prostate so that it shrinks down and gives you, you know, more room to pee. And then you've got the laser surgeries, et cetera. And, so there's a whole bunch of approaches to taking out parts of the prostate without having to remove the whole thing. So
is that helpful?
Hope that's of help.
Didn't you in the past talk a little bit about how progesterone could help remove some of the dead cells?
Progesterone is more useful for preventing prostate enlargement. The prostate has alpha estrogen receptors in it. And in young men with their higher progesterone levels, that prevents the alpha estrogen receptor from enlarging the prostate. As men age and their progesterone levels decline, that alpha estrogen receptor changes its function and actually starts immortalizing prostate cells. So they live longer and longer and longer, and that's why the prostate starts to enlarge. So keeping progesterone levels in a robust range is quite useful for preventing prostate enlargement. But once it's enlarged, I am a bit skeptical that it's actually going to have a significant shrinkage.
Okay. Well, thank you for the education.
You're welcome, sir.
When he gets a chance to listen to it, he'll appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, take care, sir.
Bye-bye. All right, thank you for the call, Terry. I'm Lynette here with Dr. Jerry Mixon, and this is Leading Edge Medicine. Here's the number to call to get through and get in the queue. 800-465-8770. We are now headed over to Newcastle. We have Linda calling. Good morning, Linda.
Hello, Linda.
Hi. My husband, in February, we both took the Galleri test at the Longevity Clinic in Kirkland and got the results back. His came back positive for colon cancer, which, of course, we were blown away. He's 80 years old. He's always been really fit and a healthy person, but has never had any health issues. Always had high levels of testosterone. He was a health nut before it was, you know, he's like 80. So when I met him when I was 20, he was already eating like super and taking a good quality of life.
Lucky girl there, Linda.
So he went for his colonoscopy and the result came back that they took a polyp and, of course, sent it out. And then there was a tumor that they found. And I guess it was pretty significant, but it's weird because he has no symptoms. His bowel movements have always been normal, still are normal. He wasn't experiencing any pain or anything. But the location of the tumor was right where the rectum, right at or near where the rectum intersects. It's in his colon, but right where it intersects with the rectum on the right side.
Sure. Yep. And we call that colorectal cancer. Yeah.
Ah, okay.
Okay. Yeah. So they want to do a CT scan because they said when they did the colonoscopy, I can't remember whether they said they couldn't get around it or they didn't want to disturb the tumor by going around it with the scope.
Okay.
So they want to do a CT scan so they can see behind, you know, what's beyond it, up into the colon.
Absolutely.
Okay. It sounds logical to me, too, but my husband has always gone to a naturopath doctor who's also Ayurvedic. He's an Indian gentleman, and he was very discouraging him from getting a CT scan because he said it has too much radiation. And he suggested instead, couldn't they just do an MRI? So I just kind of, that's my main question is what, we're kind of.
Well, I like MRIs better than CT for soft tissue evaluation personally.
Okay.
The insurance companies like CT because they cost a lot less.
Ah.
All right. There are many decisions in this world. You follow the money and you get the answers. Yeah, MRI will cost a multiple of what the CT costs. And so the insurance companies say, hey, why don't you do a CT first? And then if you need to, you can do an MRI. I usually jump straight to the MRI.
Can she push for that?
She can talk to her doctor and
another factor was he just had an MRI for another issue, and well, it's kind of in the same, not in the same area, but one of his legs. He's having some. He goes to that other doctor, Dan Nelson, too, because he was having some issues with nerve pain in his his right leg,
Okay.
And he just had an MRI done earlier this year, I think it was in February. And so is there any way that they could tell anything from that?
Well, the radiologist would probably look at that scan, but if he's getting pain down his leg, they're probably looking at the lower spinal cord segments, looking for sciatic nerve and that sort of thing. Instead of focusing really closely on the rectal colon junction. So, nice that he's had one, but different technique, looking for different stuff.
Okay, so you would recommend going with
MRI. Yeah. Now, the other question I would have is what sort of MRI he's going to have. There are two major types of MRI machines out right now. And the more powerful the magnets, the more precisely they can visualize the tissues. Okay. And power of these magnets is measured in Teslas. Who drives a Tesla, that always struck me as interesting. It's named after Nikolai Tesla, electrical genius from the turn of the last century. But, so there's 1.5 and 3 Tesla machines out there. Okay. The 3 Tesla machines give you far better resolution than the 1.5 Tesla. So personally, if I'm going to be getting an MRI for something really important like a cancer, wanting to see if we're seeing spread or invasion, I want the 3 Tesla machine rather than the 1.5. So you might also bring that up. Okay. Your doctor's probably just say, what the hell are you doing talking about Teslas? But that's the issue.
Yeah.
Okay. But you want the most precise localization you can get, and that is done with the more powerful machines.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And also, what is your opinion on that? I can't remember if they said they couldn't get around it or they didn't want to disturb the tumor.
Probably did not.
Apparently, it must really soft because...
Yeah, well, and the problem with cancers, especially colon cancers, you're working in a soft, distensible structure. The colon is basically a fairly thin-walled tube. I mean, it has bands of muscle, but they're smooth muscle, thin. And you don't want to put too much pressure on that wall. And especially if you think you may have a malignancy there, the last thing you want to do is squish it and start trying to force cells out into the bloodstream and the lymphatics.
That's what I'm wondering.
Yeah. Okay. So better to take a look at it where you don't have to handle it if you can.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks a lot. I think that's all the questions I had.
All right.
Good. I'm so glad he got that information and got in, especially without symptoms.
Yeah, because, the good news is getting that Galleri test may well have saved his life.
Yes.
If we can find the cancer before he's having symptoms.
Yes.
That's right.
Yes. All right. Thank you for the call, Linda. All right. Des Moines is where we're headed to now, Dr. Mixon. And Matthew is on the line with a question for you. Hi, Matthew.
Hello, Matthew.
Good morning. What a neat opportunity to talk to you guys this morning. I just was yesterday diagnosed with my femoral heads are starting to get necrotic because I got stem cells from Dr. Nelson, and they said that you can't take NSAIDs, and I had this thing that recurred from a couple years ago in my neck. prednisone, went ahead and just nipped it right in the bud and took care of it. So their team got back to me and said, you can take a short burst of steroidal anti-inflammatory as well. Because of the pain, I was being kind of dumb and didn't know that it's really important to not drink alcohol while you're taking prednisone.
Yeah.
And went ahead and got myself, some pretty sore hip joints right now.
Oh, dear.
So they were kind of, it pretty much knocked that ass. I'm not drinking now.
Good.
You can leave your warm, snuggly, cuddly grandpa outfit and leave that knife in your sock.
I always agree.
And, anyway,
that's why I carry a concealed weapons permit. But go ahead.
So anyhow, I'm a patient of Dr. Prochaska, and they were kind of vague on saying that frequent use of steroids may be causing this. Should I not apply my transdermal hydrogel this morning, or I just got a new bag from Paramount. Should I maybe up the dose so that the osteoblasts are nice and robust?
Yeah. The it's true that all of the sex hormones are, quote, steroids, but that's very different from the prednisone and the other corticosteroids you're talking about. You can use your testosterone, and that actually stimulates the osteoblast to make new bone cells. It's also a vasodilator. It opens up the arteries and the blood supply to give you a richer blood supply to that femoral neck. So.
Okay. Yeah. So just in general, would you advise maybe adding a few more lines this morning for the next couple of days?
Or? Well, I don't have access to your laboratory work, so I don't know where you're already being carried.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. So, just a couple of weeks ago, Dr. Prochaska told me that my free was 174 and my total was like 800 and something.
Okay. Well, normal goes up as high as 210. So, of course, that's normal for an 18-year-old athlete. But when people are either trying to lose fat or trying to build bone or those sorts of things, I tend to carry them at the higher end of normal. If you're if you have less focused need for testosterone, then I carry you down 150 to 180. So you're already in a perfect range that we normally carry people. But if our goal is trying to improve, bone formation, we might carry you a little higher for a few months or so.
Okay. Awesome.
All right.
Appreciate that.
Okay. Oh, and the other thing you might consider, too, is if he doesn't have you on Tadalafil, you might ask him to send a prescription in. Again, that's normally prescribed as an ED drug, but it increases blood flow everywhere. It's a vasodilator. And, the way it improves erections is it increases blood flow. But it helps the blood flow to your muscles, to your bones, to your brain, to your heart and lungs. So, I throw Tadalafil at most of the men and women in my practice.
Right. Great. And so I'm also taking two doses of L-citrulline a day. And you said something about if you use more than one product, it would give you a headache because it drops your blood pressure.
Sometimes, yes. Yep. Yeah. Or sometimes just the increased venous blood flow in your brain will give you headaches from some forms of the ED drugs. But all right.
Okay.
All right. Thank you for the call, Matthew. Right.
Thank you so much.
Take care, sir. Bye-bye.
Good information there. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine, and Dr. Jerry Mixon here in the mic, taking the phone calls and enjoying talking with you this morning. A lot of different topics today. Mm-hmm. And we've got two more we're going to jump into here right now. You can get in the call queue by calling 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. We are now headed to Graham. Susan is on the line with her question, doctor.
Hello, Susan.
Good morning. I've been diagnosed as having hypothyroidism, and for several years now I've been taking NP thyroid, and it seems, I don't know, that it's getting possibly there's a problem with availability or something, because I'm having more and more difficulty trying to get my prescription refilled, and they keep trying to give me synthetic. So I was wondering what your opinion is on NP thyroid versus a synthetic version.
Okay. Well, the general synthetics that are used are levothyroxine, which is just a manufactured form of the most common thyroid hormone made by your thyroid gland. And so we call that T4 because it has thyroid hormone with four iodine molecules attached. Once that T4 is in your system, the levothyroxine, your tissues break it down. They actually cleave off one of the iodines, turn it into T3. T3 is about 3.5 times more potent than T4.
Mm.
And so you can give people levothyroxine, and if they are converting it to T3 effectively, then you don't have a problem. But some people, as they age, decrease their ability to get rid of that extra iodine molecule and make the T3 effectively. And so you can end up with plenty of T4, but not enough T3, and you still have hypothyroid symptoms because the most active form of thyroid hormone is in short supply, even if you're getting the T4, the synthetic form. So part of what we do, I have often started people on the Synthroid or a similar brand. And if they convert T4 to T3, fine, I'm happy. If they don't, then we may actually add a little something like Armour Thyroid, a natural porcine, which is really not a thyroid hormone per se. It's whole thyroid gland. When the Armour Meatpacking Company is making their ham and bacon, they take the thyroid gland out of the pigs and wash it, freeze dry it, and then grind it into a powder, and that's what they sell as.
So it's the Armour brand thyroid.
Yes.
Okay, I was thinking Armour like Shield Warrior.
It's Armour Thyroid. Okay. It's from the Armour Meatpacking Company.
Okay.
There are other companies that now do it. It's not just Armour, but that's kind of is what it's all become called.
Okay.
And that actually has enzymes in it that enhance the conversion of T4 to T3. So if I've got somebody who's not converting enough of their T4 to T3, I may give them their levothyroxine and then just a little tiny touch of the whole thyroid extract. And that will often allow them to convert more into their T3, and suddenly their symptoms go away.
Okay. So what is the difference between that regimen, which I'm on, and the MP thyroid that her doctor has her on?
Right. That's, again, it's a different version of
it. It's
the
just a different. Yeah. Is it also synthetic?
No.
The MP thyroid?
No.
Okay.
The problem you've got is that the supply is variable. Sometimes you have really trouble getting the natural thyroids. And that will be because the quality of the thyroids coming out of the pigs is not adequate for us.
Okay.
And so I have, over the decades, seen kind of waves. Sometimes the Armour gets very cheap, and other times it gets very expensive and hard to get, and that's all, it's just a supply-demand issue. Does that answer your question, ma'am?
So is there any problem then? As long as I'm being monitored, my T3 and T4 levels, is there any problem switching between the two?
No, you shouldn't have problems. I mean, the potency is different, but you can switch back and forth. You just have to make sure that they are monitoring your blood levels, your free T3 and free T4. Okay. Now, the thyroid's a little more complex than most people realize, though, because there's also a component called reverse T3 and reverse T4. And your standard thyroid tests don't tell you about that. They show the total amount of T3 and T4, and they'll show you the free T3, free T4, which is the non-protein complexes. But then some people make a stereoisomer Instead of doing the R, the racemic version, they do the dextrose version. And if you're making too much of the reverse form, your thyroid test will say you have plenty of thyroid, but your body can't use the reverse thyroid hormone. And so you end up effectively low on functional thyroid hormone, even if the test says you have enough. So if people are still having low thyroid symptoms, despite a lab test that says they have enough thyroid, then we run another test looking at the reverse isomers. So hopefully you don't run into that.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Doctor.
You're welcome, ma'am. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Susan. We'll just keep taking the calls. They keep lighting up. I think once I mentioned that we won't be here next week, it's like, ooh, I better get my call in.
Perhaps.
And we encourage that. 800-465-8770. It's Leading Edge Medicine. We're headed north now to Marysville. Lisa on the line. Welcome, Lisa.
Hello, Lisa.
Hi. I just wanted to thank you again. You guys are so wonderful, and you are a wealth of knowledge. So I just love listening to your show. Absolutely love it.
And
you are very helpful. Okay, so you probably remember I called you a couple weeks ago, and you were very helpful in reassuring me. I'm having a surgery coming up this week, reconstructive surgery on my eyelid for some basal cell cancer, and I was concerned a couple weeks ago, and you and I am taking your advice. You had told me to go ahead and do IV sedation rather than oral, and you explained why, and I didn't know any of this. And so anyway, thank you.
Oh, good.
The reason I'm calling today is so it's kind of twofold, but I had an echocardiogram done about 7 years ago. And I kind of forgot about it. I know that seems kind of odd, that how would you forget, but I just kind of did with everything going on.
Okay.
And a few days ago, my surgical coordinator, who's setting up the surgery for next week, asked me if I had any diagnosed heart conditions. And I was like, oh. And then it's kind of occurred to me, well, I have this echocardiogram, so I found the paper and looked at it, and I found things on it that now have kind of re-concerned me about these things. So I have four things, and they're on there that mainly concern me, and there's two questions to do with it. One is, can any of these conditions be reversed with lifestyle changes, not with surgery or medicines necessarily? Can I do anything about it? And then the second question will be, are any of these conditions I have things that could be dangerous for me doing the conscious sedation? So here are the things that were on there. Pseudo-normal left ventricular diastolic dysfunction. That was the one that I think was the kind of, in my mind, the worst one that I'm worried about. And then the other three were mild to moderate tricuspid regurgitation, ascending thoracic aorta is dilated and measures 3.9 centimeters, and then the inferior vena cava is also dilated.
Okay.
So those two are dilated. But the pseudo-normal left ventricular diastolic dysfunction, I kind of looked all this up, and it made me concerned. So again, with all those four conditions, would you say that you could also reassure me that if I'm having surgery, that will be okay being on conscious sedation with those conditions? And then number two, can I change these conditions with my lifestyle?
Okay.
Those are my two questions.
Let me do two things here. First of all, I do want to reassure you then, go ahead and have your little Mohs procedure. The eyelid surgery is very, very minor. They just give you a little bit of IV sedation to make you relax. They're not going to knock you out really. This is not going to interfere with your cardiac function at all.
Okay.
So for that, that's the good news there. Okay.
With that,
you hear the music though?
We'll
talk
on.
About
okay.
that, but sit tight. I have to come back right after this top of the hour break because it's a hard break. I can't alter it.
There you go.
Right
yes.
Back.
We'll be back to talk with Lisa, and we'll talk with Paul as well. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine. Stay right there. And if you'd like to call in, here's the number, 800-465-8770.